You know, you cannot be too Jewish.
Thank you. I couldn't possibly agree more.
Shalom. Welcome to the Too Jewish radio show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. This morning, our guest is Nate Weisbat, speaking to us from Israel on a mission trip there for the Jewish Federations of North America on what it's like being in Israel at the start of the Iran-Israel war, how it feels to be stranded there, and the attitude of Israelis today. We'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at TooJewishRadio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at TooJewishRadio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Too Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Too Jewish is paid for by Too Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Too Jewish.
Shalom. The Israel-Iran hot war is now in its second week, and if anyone tells you they know how it will end, they are, well, making it up. There are many, many different opinions about the Iranian nuclear capacity before the war, how much of it was destroyed in Israel's air and drone strikes, how much that would delay Iranian development of nuclear warheads, what the chances are of regime change in Iran with the support of Russia, China, and North Korea for Iran will look like, truly an axis of evil for our time, and of course, what President Donald Trump will eventually decide to do about U.S. involvement. To say that it's complicated doesn't capture the nature of this region, let alone the battle between the large, oil-rich nation of Iran. There are 92 million Persians, with its relatively advanced education and technology sectors and large military, a theocratic Islamist dictatorship, pitted against Israel, the small, fewer than 10 million Israelis, very technologically and militarily advanced Jewish democracy. There are those who believe that Iran's brutal and unpopular regime will collapse under the weight of this war's losses and failures. And there are those who believe World War III is breaking out right now, that Iran will be supplied with nuclear warheads by its close ally, Vladimir Putin of Russia, which it will then use on Israel. There are those who believe it was essential to stop Iran from going nuclear right now, and this has been a necessary hard choice. There are those who believe Prime Minister Netanyahu is waging this war now for his own political benefit. There are a wide variety of guesses as to how all this will come out. No one really knows, of course, what will happen tomorrow, let alone in a month or a year. Speculation is rampant as to how many missiles Iran still has in its remaining stockpiles, how many anti-missile rockets Israel has to shoot them down. We do know that Israelis are sheltering in safe rooms and bomb shelters, that they have shut down most of their economy for the moment. We know that Iranians are fleeing Tehran, although unlike Iran, Israel is not targeting civilians. And we know that this is a tense, fraught situation. Israel's initial military and intelligence success in these operations remains stunning. Our thoughts and prayers are that Iran's nuclear aspirations are permanently thwarted, that Israel is able to return to a more peaceful place speedily and soon. If the repressive Islamist dictatorship of Iran and its Ayatollah topples, so much the better. But it has been in power since the 1970s, so that seems unlikely. What is more likely is that some sort of accommodation will be made to keep the regime in power, but without a nuclear program. We certainly can hope and pray for peace, but we should remember, Iran has quite literally been at war with Israel for a long time, attacked it directly twice in just the last 14 months with missiles, drones, and so on. It is reaping what it sowed. War doesn't solve things ultimately, but it can end mortal threats to a nation's existence. We pray that this war, inaugurated with Iran's missile and drone attacks on Israel last year, will end with Israel in a safer, better place. We hope that ultimately peace will be in that place and security. There must be another way. play us in this morning on Two Jewish. Here's Noah and Mira Awad, Israelis, singing their song.
There must be another, must be another way.
That was Israeli musicians Noah, that's Achinoam Nini, and Mira Awad singing There Must Be Another Way. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is a special one, my good friend Nate Weisband in Israel right now. He was on a Jewish Federation national mission there when the Iran-Israel war exploded. He fills us in on how that was for him and his group, the attitudes of Israelis now, what it felt like to be, I guess, well, stranded in Israel during such a challenging time of war. Meet Nate when we come back in a moment here on Two Jewish. We welcome to Two Jewish a good friend, Nate Weisband, who is at the moment on an Israel mission, which meant he couldn't get home. He's there in the midst of the Iranian attack. Nate works for the Jewish Philanthropies of Southern Arizona. He's a wonderful guy. I've known him, I think, most of your life is a fair assessment. And we are happy to talk to him from Israel right now. Good morning, Nate. Welcome. Shalom.
Shalom. Boker Tov. Thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about how you experienced the beginning of the Iran attacks and the war that's now engaged.
So I'll back up a little bit and just sort of explain why I'm here in the first place.
Please.
I joined a Pride mission trip run by Jewish Federations of North America, which was comprised of about 100 LGBTQ plus Jews from around the country and Canada to come to Israel and experience Israel in a post-October 7th world through an LGBTQ lens. I was, very excited at the opportunity to come back and do this trip. The trip was amazing. I met so many incredible people, both other Americans on the trip and other queer folks, queer Jews, and then Israelis as well. We heard so many stories. Our days were jam-packed, and it was an incredible trip. So the trip ended on Thursday night, and then a majority of us decided to stay for the weekend because it was Tel Aviv Pride. So that's how we booked our trips, was to be able to experience Pride.
By the way, I've been there twice, just kind of by accident, for the Pride experience in Tel Aviv. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I was really looking forward to it. I have never been to Israel for Pride, so it was a big draw. Then a bunch of us went to a Pride party that night on Thursday night. We were kind of out and about, and then all of a sudden, around 3:30 in the morning, we have an app on our phone called Homefront Command. That app was going off, and there was these alerts, and it was very confusing, especially to us Americans. Israelis are very, maybe almost too casual about it.
Right.
So they shut down the party, and we got together kind of as a group, and it was a little bit, I won't say chaos, but it was a little unsettling, and kind of nobody knew what was happening. But there weren't any cabs running, so we kind of hightailed it about 45 minutes back to our hotel along the beach. That was kind of our goal, was like just get back to the hotel, which we did safely. There was an alarm. Some people made it to a bunker. A safe room, like a bomb shelter.
Right.
We went into another building to use their safe room, but there was basically no attacks at that point. Then we were kind of in limbo. It was kind of like 8 in the morning. We kind of stayed up all night, and we weren't really sure what was going on. And then we found out. The attacks came pretty soon after that. We had gone, I'm trying to remember the sequence of events because it was only a few days ago, but so much has happened since then. I went to my friend's house, a friend of mine from Tucson who lives in Tel Aviv with her boyfriend. I went with Ital, who is also works at Jewish Philanthropies with me, who joined me on this trip. We went to their house, and no, we didn't get an alarm that day. This is now Friday. So we weren't sure what to expect. There was like a little gathering of people at an apartment in Yafo. We were there and just kind of laying low and waiting to see. They have, every apartment has a safe room in it, so you're
right,
never too far from safety. And then the attack started coming on Friday night. And we were in and out of the safe room till maybe 1 a.m. We went back to Danielle's house. There were more alarms. So, and that's pretty much how it's been since then. Siren after siren, which is a very scary experience. Every time you hear a siren, it's very rattling. You never know when things are coming or how far they are from you. But what's happening is Iran is sending ballistic missiles into Israel, into civilian centers, to try and do as much death and destruction as they can.
We will talk much more with Nate Weisband, who is in Israel right now, kind of marooned. We'll talk about what it means to try to get home and the continued experience of being in Israel during wartime when we come back in a moment here on Too Jewish. B Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a fabulous Jewish synagogue in Northwest Tucson and the Catalina Foothills, celebrates a terrific array of services, classes, and events this summer. Established 6.5 years ago by wonderful congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in Northwest Tucson and the Catalina Foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everybody throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary. Call 520-276-5675. Religious school is available now for school-age children and grandchildren. Join us for our fabulous Hebrew school, Bar Bat Mitzvah programs, Torah Tikes experience, confirmation, and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org to sign up. Join us. Friday night services are at 6:30 p.m., always followed by a delicious Oneg Shabbat. Shabbat morning Torah studies at 9 a.m. Services are at 10 a.m., all with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, leading them. You can also go to services on our Facebook page, Beit Simcha Tucson, BeitSimcha Tucson. All of our Adult Education Academy classes are taught live and on Zoom, and you can go to those by connecting through the website. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services, religious school, and Torah Tikes programs, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, confirmation, high school programs, rich array of Adult Education Academy courses on so many subjects taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest growing and, well, most fun Jewish congregation in all of Southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O, JewishRadio18@gmail.com. Or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through our website, 2JewishRadio.com. Streaming us from there or downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store. It's very popular Jewish podcasts. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine. Over 250,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify. Post a rating, review 2 Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments all help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of Southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen. 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
So you were telling us a great story about running into Jews in, of all places, Slovenia. And there was an appendix to that story that we just ran out of time for last week. Maybe catch us up on that trip and then fill in the blanks.
Gladly. People who listened to last week's show heard the first two encounters with Jews. There was a third, which in some ways was the most interesting. So the city of Ljubljana sits on a winding, beautiful river called Ljubljanica, which kind of bisects the city into two sides. And on one side, there's a very steep hill not far from the river. You take a funicular up to the old castle fortified that protected the city of Ljubljana, and that's why they built the capital right below it. It's a huge complex, which my legs were way too tired to walk around much of this complex, and there were a lot of stairs. So I ducked into the local Vinotech while my friend explored the whole castle complex. Well, I'm sitting in this Vinotech, and there's an American couple at the next table. The woman's face is like a map of Israel. The guy, not so much. They're from Southern California. The guy is a professor of history, so we had a lot in common. And they also knew a lot about wine. They were there with their 22-year-old son, who joined them slightly later. And they were going on a, like, four-day hiking and camping trip the very next day. So they were all quite fit. Son was about to leave for Singapore to do some kind of internship there, and I could give him some tips. But as we're making conversation, the woman tells me, well, at least this half of the table is Jewish. She says, well, my son and I are Jewish. My husband isn't. And you guys, I assume, are Jewish. Well, in fact, the friend who's a law school professor that I was traveling with has a beard and could possibly pass for a chassid, but he's not Jewish. So I said, well, also, this half of this table is also Jewish. Very funny, unexpected, pleasant encounter with some really nice people. You know, you just never know what to expect. And I have these encounters so often that they don't really shock me anymore. But the fact that I had like four in the course of 2 days was kind of shocking. And I sent a text or voicemail or something to my friend who's the chief rabbi of Montenegro, which is the other end of the former Yugoslavia.
Right.
And I said, well, you know, we're in what used to be the same country. And would you believe, well, this happens to him all the time in Montenegro, where I was often told there were no Jews at all. So he wasn't at all surprised. But his comment was a very encouraging comment about, like, you know, you have a natural shlichus, which is an untranslatable term, I think.
Right.
You can give it your best effort.
Yeah, it's a very Chabad thing. You have a natural religious responsibility to connect, an automatic messenger status to connect with Jews elsewhere in the world.
Yeah, it was a funny comment, but encouraging. And he was not in the least surprised. He says, this happens to you no matter where you go, which there's some truth to, and I don't quite understand why. You know, I don't wear a kippah in public.
Hey, Tom, for the first 2 years he knew you, my dad didn't think you were Jewish. When you moved to town, and I heard, this is 25 years ago or something, and I heard, oh, there's this new expert on foreign affairs. He worked in the State Department. His name is Tom Price. He's speaking for the Jewish Studies Program. I thought, why are they having somebody not Jewish speak for the Jewish Studies Program? Like, you could pass.
Pretty funny.
But you don't, wherever you go. Tom, thanks so much. We will talk next week.
Always a pleasure.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. An old Jewish man is on the operating table awaiting surgery. He insists his son, a renowned surgeon, must perform the operation. Well, son agrees. As he's about to receive anesthesia, the father asks to speak to his son, the surgeon. Yes, Dad, what is it? Don't be nervous, son. Do your best. Just remember, if something happens to me, your mother is going to live with you and your wife for the rest of her life. That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature of Too Jewish. Just for you, you should live and be well. Please, don't need surgery. Please. And now a word of Torah. The portion of Korach in the book of Numbers represents the greatest, most unprincipled, most arrogant rebellion in all of Jewish history. There are reasons for this revolt, as always there are. After a failure of faith in the previous Torah portion of Shlach Lecha, the people of Israel have just learned that none of them, none of the adults anyway, are not going to get into the Promised Land. Stung by the collective sentence of death in the desert, at the start of this week's portion of Korach, a group of rebels under the leadership of a priest, a Levite named Korach, challenges the control of Moses and Aaron. Born into the very same Levite tribe as Moses, Korach is an insider, rebelling against his own kin. "Who are these guys, Moses and Aaron, to take on the authority of ruling over us?" he asks. He claims these religious leaders, who have God's certification, have arrogated to themselves powers that should truly belong to the people. In their place, he proposes placing a much more democratically, perhaps, appointed dictator himself to lead the people. Korach's faux populist rebellion threatens the very foundation of Israelite leadership. For if the God of liberation is not at the heart of this Jewish enterprise, if it's all a matter of personal ego and self-aggrandizement, of delegations and committees and rules of order, well, we might as well go back to Egypt and live in slavery, as many Israelites propose now to do. But Korach dissembles. He lies about Moses' motivations. Moses wishes to bring the people of Israel closer to God's ideal of a sacred community. Moses clearly has no great desire for a high office. Instead, he has held it as a sacred trust given to him, almost forced upon him by God. In rebellion, Korach threatens not Moses' authority, but God's. Our Torah portion tells us that in order to determine the ongoing leadership of Israel, a great public trial is conducted. The end result is that Korach and his followers are completely destroyed by God, while Moses and Aaron are fully vindicated. It's always nice when God steps in and has your back, huh? The drama of the scene is powerful and lasting. The religious vision of Judaism is reaffirmed, of Israelite religion. An ethical foundation based in God and Torah, not a community like all others based in human calculation and egotistical grasping for control and domination. The abiding lesson is that a Judaism that doesn't base itself in humility and reverence for God, a Judaism that is focused on personal gain or power politics, will fail too. Only through faith, dedication to ideals, loyalty, devotion to the higher purposes of Jewish ethics and meaning, only then can we reach our own promised land. The truth is that only Jewish congregations and communities that work together with an understanding that God is the final arbiter, that truly seek comity and community, not control and domination or argument, well, only those will attract the favor of God. And of all those, we wish to join and make a part of our own sacred congregations. May this be our will, for if it is, it will also prove to be God's. When we return in a moment, our guest, Nate Weisband, a young Jewish leader stranded in Israel when the Iran-Israel war exploded last week, speaks to us from Tel Aviv about how Israelis are responding to this challenging situation, what it's like to be there unexpectedly in the midst of it. Find out when we come back in a moment on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from Rabbi Sam Kohan.
In In southern Israel, Soroka Medical Center in Be'er Sheva was hit directly by an Iranian missile amidst the most damaging barrage sent by Iran in several days. No one, fortunately, was killed in this strike, which came just a day after the hospital building had been evacuated. But hundreds of people were treated in hospitals across Israel for injuries, some serious, incurred during early morning explosions in multiple cities. Israeli officials say Iran fired a cluster bomb for the first time. That's one whose warhead separates into multiple smaller explosive projectiles to avoid destruction by the anti-missile batteries. Israel said the attack on the hospital represented an escalation that will forcefully be responded to. As Israeli forces continue to strike targets in Iran, Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz said the war objectives have now expanded and include the elimination of Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, Iran's supreme leader. That was not confirmed by other Israeli officials. Last week, U.S. President Donald Trump remained coy about his intentions regarding this conflict. Israel wants Trump to intervene on its behalf, particularly by giving Israel bunker-busting bombs, which will allow for the destruction of Iran's most significant nuclear facility, which is buried under a mountain where Israeli weapons cannot penetrate. Trump has signaled an openness to provide the bunker busters, but faces sharp pushback from the anti-interventionist, the isolationist wing, that is, of the Republican Party. Last week, he told reporters, "I may do it, I may not do it. I mean, nobody knows what I'm going to do." Well, that is certainly true. In a war with Iran so far, the IDF provided the first official statistic of the war and its shoot-down successes against Iran's ballistic missiles. It says it is shooting down 80 to 90% of them. Only about 5 to 10% of ballistic missiles have hit residential areas. Others have hit open space in Israel. 24 Israelis have died as we go to press from Iranian missiles fired towards civilians in Israel. Hundreds more have been wounded. Israel continues to strike the ballistic missile launchers in Iran amid an Iranian attempt to move the missiles and their firing systems away from standard locations to avoid their destruction. It is not fully known just how many ballistic missiles Iran still possesses. It is believed they have now fired off or lost to airstrikes or drone strikes over half the ballistic missiles they possessed at the start of this direct war, those that have the ability to reach Israel, that is. Israel has complete control of Iranian airspace now. Among the Israeli sites struck by missiles that penetrated the Iron Dome and Arrow defense systems was a valuable lab doing medical research at the Technion in Haifa. From Europe, well, actually from Canada, German Chancellor Friedrich Merz expressed gratitude for Israel's attacks on the Iran nuclear program. "This is the dirty work Israel is doing for all of us," Merz, who took office earlier this year, said in Canada, where he was participating in the G7 summit of world leaders. Of course, while he was there, he and the other participants signed a resolution in favor of de-escalation in the current conflict, which erupted last week. Merz made headlines with sharp criticism of Israel's operations in Gaza earlier this month. That's a rarity for both a German leader and a center-right one. But, as with several other European allies pressuring Israel to end the Gaza campaign, he has offered full-throated support for Israel's right to self-defense since the Iran war began. Now he's going further, saying he's glad Israel has taken on an adversary that posed risks for Germany and many other countries. He said he believed Iran's regime has been significantly and permanently weakened. "I can only say I have the greatest respect for the fact that the Israeli army and the Israeli government had the courage to do this," Merz said. In other news, not related to Iran, in New York City, Shuly Reuben Schwartz, chancellor of the Jewish Theological Seminary and a past guest of Two Jewish, is stepping down next year after leading the conservative movement's flagship university and rabbinical seminary since 2020. Schwartz announced her decision at JTS last week. Schwartz, first woman chancellor in the institution's history, said she planned when appointed that I would not be here for a lengthy tenure. "I've been here for 34 years, said Schwartz, a professor of Jewish history at JTS, who previously served as dean of its College of Jewish Studies and dean of the graduate school and as provost. "After a sabbatical, I'll go back to the faculty. It is not with anything other than love and excitement about what we've been able to achieve and, frankly, modeling healthy leadership transition while we're in a strong place." Schwartz will step down at the end of the 2025-2026 academic year. JTS said an executive search firm is helping find the ninth chancellor in the school's 139-year history. This past year, JTS ordained 9 rabbinical students and 3 cantorial students, a slight increase, believe it or not, over recent years. Boy, that's not very many. According to a Pew Research Center study, as of 2020, 5 years ago, just 17% of American Jews identify as conservative, compared to 37% who identify as reform. And finally, a fascinating story. Martha Cohn, a French-Jewish spy who operated behind enemy lines in Nazi Germany during the last years of World War II, passed away last month in California at the age of 105. Cohen kept her intelligence activities for the Allies secret for 5 decades, even from her own family. It was only in the late 1990s that she revealed she had served as a covert agent whose efforts behind German Nazi lines helped hasten the end of the war in Europe. Born Martha Hoffnung in 1920 in the French town of Metz, she was the 4th of 7 children in an Orthodox Jewish family. The household spoke German, a skill that ended up proving vital to her intelligence work during the war. In 1939, with the outbreak of World War II, Cohen's family relocated to Poitiers. There, she and her sister Stephanie began assisting German Jews fleeing Nazi persecution. In 1942, her sister Stephanie was arrested and later murdered at Auschwitz by the Nazis, while the rest of the family escaped using forged documents. Martha left behind her fiancé, Jacques Delaunay, a French resistance fighter later murdered by the Nazis. Cohen trained as a nurse in Marseille. Her fluency in German caught the attention of a French colonel. He recruited her into the intelligence services. The story was she had to wait in his office for something. He said, "I'm sorry, all I have is German books." She said, "Oh, I read German." That's how it started. In January of 1945, she started training in an abandoned hospital in the French Alps. As Allied forces advanced, Cohen entered Germany to report on retreating Nazi troop movements and assess civilian morale. "I made no fewer than 13 attempts to cross enemy lines, most of them at night, always in the snow," she recalled in her memoir, Behind Enemy Lines. Disguised as a nurse searching for her missing German soldier fiancé, she exploited German sentimentality in order to gather critical intelligence for the Allies. "The Germans are so sentimental about these things. It worked beautifully," she recounted. When asked what gave her the strength for her dangerous missions, she said, "Survival is a very strong instinct. That's one thing. Revenge is another very strong instinct. I really wanted revenge against the Nazis." May she rest in peace. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews around the world. And now it's time for our inexplicably random Zen Judaism segment, a special feature of Two Jewish. Haikus for Jews. Is one Nobel Prize so much to ask from a child? After all I've done? And appropriate. Today, mild schwitzing. Tomorrow, so hot you'll plot. 5-day forecast? Feh. Yep, that's summer in Tucson. Those were 2 haikus for Jews, part of our unexpectedly appearing Zen Judaism segment, a special feature just for you of Two Jewish. Oy. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Nate Weisband, who is doing a great job with Jewish Philanthropies of Southern Arizona involving young Jews across the community. Nate is in Israel. He was on an LGBTQ plus mission to Israel from, I guess that's all from all of North America, right? U.S. and Canada, and they were there at the beginning of the war and are still there. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what did you know about, you know, okay, can't get home, all the flights are canceled. What's the next step?
The next step was to sort of just wait it out. That was like the initial thought process, was to just wait and see, kind of. Make sure you keep yourself safe and you're able to sort of... I'm also in contact with the staff at Jewish Federations of North America, who are incredible and hard work around the clock to make sure that everybody's safe. Every time there's a siren, I mean, I'm on like 5 or 6 different WhatsApp groups, and everybody makes sure everybody is safe, and that's all well and good. The plan now is to try and get out to, and I can't, I'm being a little vague because they asked me
not to be too specific, right?
Yeah, exactly. Not to reveal too many details about how we're trying to get out, just for security purposes. As of now, I have a flight booked through a neighboring country, and we're just praying that that is able to take off and get me out. I had a previous flight that got canceled this morning, so I had to scramble to rebook and try and go through another connecting country. And it's just, it's something that I've never had to deal with. So it's just a lot, uncertainty.
I know that, for example, Birthright Israel took a bunch of people, like 1,500 people, out by cruise ship to Cyprus, from where one hopes they can fly home. Tell us about the mood of the Israelis.
It's pretty amazing. This is something unprecedented and something unlike anything they've ever experienced. And yet you would know it, because it's really taking its toll. But they are just, I mean, we were in the first night that there were bombs or missiles coming down on us. We were sitting in the safe room, and they were keeping the energy very positive and playing guitar and singing and dancing. And the two Americans in the room were like, what is going on? But it really did help to keep the energy up and keep the mood positive. And that's all that I've experienced since. I mean, the scariest night was probably, I want to say, 2 nights ago or 3 nights ago, where I was in my friend's apartment in her safe room, and we kind of heard the window shake. And as soon as we got the alert that we were able to leave the safe room, they were getting texts that there were buildings in the neighborhood that had collapsed. And one of their friends came over with her 10-month-old baby and their dog because her building collapsed. But she was in the safe room, so she was fine. But it's real. Like, it's happening here. It's not in, you know, it's all over Israel. But, you know, especially in Tel Aviv, it's very present, omnipresent, for sure.
Are you moving from place to place? Are you staying at the hotel? Like, what's your own location like?
Yeah. So I was initially kind of bouncing around. I was at the hotel. Then Ital and I had booked an Airbnb for our extended stay. The first night we didn't feel comfortable staying there, so we stayed at the friend's house that I was referencing. Then we did go to the Airbnb. Then we had another reservation at a different Airbnb, and that's when we kind of split up. She stayed at that Airbnb. I went back to my friend's house. And currently, I am in a suburb of Tel Aviv with my cousin and his family, and not moving around so much. So I have more of a home base right now.
The idea that Tel Aviv is protected is not accurate, right? I mean, there was a hit in Bat Yam, which is a suburb of Tel Aviv. There was some serious hits in Haifa area. What are Israelis, the Israelis that you know, saying about how long they expect this war to last?
I've heard everything from a few more days to weeks to who knows. No one really has any answers. We're kind of just going from the news reports that we're getting, The latest is that the U.S. might get involved. Again, we don't know. Everybody is glued to their phones, especially while we're in the safe room. People are checking to see which cities were attacked and the casualties, and nobody really knows.
In your time there, and knowing that theoretically you should be able to come home fairly soon, what has changed about your perception of Israelis?
Wow.
sorry, I like to ask hard questions. It's kind of my job, you know.
Good thing for me to reflect on. I've always known that Israelis have put up with a lot, but I think the conversations that I've had with Israelis about, they ask me a lot too. They ask me about the anti-Semitism going on in the States, and they're very concerned for us over there too. It's not just about what they're going through, because, you know, we are one people, and I feel that so much here. But Israelis are, they take care of each other, and that's something that I didn't really experience firsthand before. But it's like the story that I told you about the friend that was stuck in the, whose building collapsed and they needed to help her. They immediately ran out of the door to go get her, go find her, bring her to their apartment and take care of her. So Israelis just have the biggest hearts. They are so resilient and really just want peace. They really just want this to end. They want to live peacefully and be left alone. Just another note on the anti-Semitism piece, you know, they really don't understand why people have so many opinions about a place that they don't know the history about or have never been to. So it's very hard for them to understand this rise in anti-Semitism when all they're trying to do is live their lives.
Obviously, it's a unique experience for you. Did you get the feeling that Israelis have just been through this so much that it doesn't have a great impact on them?
Not really. This attack is unprecedented, and I can see that it is starting to filter in a little bit. Normally, I would say yes. If it was a rocket attack from the Houthis or
some rockets from Gaza or even from Lebanon,
exactly,
or Syria,
like,
or whatever.
I really am only referring to the experience of going into a safe room and coming out. That really doesn't affect them so much. But this has been a barrage of ballistic missiles on civilization. So I do think it is wearing on people. But also, I want to say that there's still, you know, 50 plus hostages stuck in Gaza, and that is an omnipresent concern. And, you know, the attacks of October 7th are still very real. So it's not like they're kind of moving on to the next war, the next crisis. Like October 7th and the hostages not being home is still also keeping Israelis from having the closure they need and being able to move on and actually start to deal with the trauma of what has been happening the last close to two years.
You know, last I was there, I was in Israel about a little less than a year and a half ago. The focus for the Israelis was on the hostages. It was not on destroying Hamas or defeating Gaza. And I know this is just your own anecdotal experience in talking to people, but there's been a lot of attention paid to the fact that it seems like maybe the current administration in Israel has forgotten that the hostages really matter. Do the Israelis you talk to feel that?
Yeah. I had a pretty in-depth conversation with my cousin last night, just trying to understand where they're coming from and what they have experienced. And yeah, that's the kind of the vibe is that it's not about getting the hostages back as much as it is continuing war, which I still don't fully understand, because I don't know a lot about Israeli government or the
Sometimes I think the less you know about the Israeli government, the happier you're going to be.
Yeah, that's what I understand. But the vibe in Israel, to sum up, the vibe in Israel is that they are not pleased with the government, period.
I want to thank Nate Weisband for a fascinating visit, a great visit here on Two Jewish. Nate, Godspeed and Asiya Tova. I hope it's a safe and healthy return home speedily and soon, like we say.
Thank you so much. Continue to pray for Israel, and I will see you all very soon.
Looking forward to it. When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week for another great edition of Two Jewish. Our guest then will be Haley Cohen Gilliland, author of a powerful new book, A Flower Traveled in My Blood, the incredible story of the grandmothers in Argentina who fought to find a stolen generation of children, children of people who were disappeared by the fascist regime. And join us at Congregation Beit Simcha every Friday night. Services in Onik Shabbat at 6:30 p.m. Saturday morning, 2, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush. In person, live, and on our Facebook page. Our playout this morning is a little, well, fun klezmer music. It's just bouncy and delightful. Enjoy.
Two Jewish is sponsored by Two Jewish Radio Programs, Tucson, Arizona.